Think back to the classic books of your childhood. Did you read Enid Blyton? Was The Hobbit your favourite, or was it the works of C.S. Lewis? Or is it something older still, such as The Wonderful Wizard of Oz? What is it that makes these books classics? I'm Matt Smith, and you're listening to a La Trobe University podcast. And with me today to discuss this is David Beagley, who teaches on topics of children's literature at the Bendigo campus of La Trobe University.
I think every publisher in the world is probably trying to work that out. After the success of Harry Potter, everybody wants a big-selling, popular, long-lasting title like that. And I think those are probably the key elements. Popularity's obviously a major part of it, but it's a very overused term when you think that every soapy or movie actor who just appears in a role then is lauded around as a soapy star or a movie star. That classic is a similar term used for books, bestseller, things like that. So simply because it's popular doesn't make it necessarily a classic. Personally, I wouldn't consider things like the Twilight vampire books classics, but they're immensely popular. I'm sure in 5 years' time, nobody will be buying them much at all. So that's another aspect, is the longevity of the title, whether people are going to still be buying it in 10, 15, 20, 50, 100 years' time. Having said that, when you think generations of reader, an adult who reads a book that they really like has probably 50, 60 years of adult reading available to them from, say, 20 on. A child reader only has 5, 10 years as a child reader. An adult book needs to go probably 50 years to be moving into a new generation of readers, whereas a children's book only needs to go 10 years to move into a new generation of readers. So if it's got something to say to the next generation, then it potentially could be a classic. And I think that's where Harry Potter might be heading that way, in that the people who first read Harry Potter when they were children are now getting towards 30, and they're starting to have their own children, and that means it's moving to another generation. And I suppose that would be the last point. What does it actually say to that audience in terms of aesthetics, the messages that you find in fairy tales, those sorts of things that still have something to say a generation on? So I'd put it in that rather confused collection of terms of longevity and popularity and something to say.
So why is it that a fantasy book lends itself so easily to being a classic then?
Oh, fantasy is a really interesting genre in children's lit. It's only recently become as popular with adults as it has with children, and by recently I mean in the last probably 30, 40 years. Adults who actually control children's literature, when you think it's adults who write the literature, adults who produce it, who publish it, who recommend it, who do all of that for children, there has been this thing that fantasy is a childish pursuit. We have these two terms, childlike and childish, and one of them's a positive and one of them's a negative, and yet they both just mean like a child. Now we go right back to the early days of a book like Gulliver's Travels, which in its time was written as a political satire for adults. But because it's a fantasy, like fairy tales, which were originally written for adults, it has become considered a children's genre. Because adults, when they read often to confirm what they know already. This is how I think, this is what I know, this is what I feel. Children read looking out. They go out to explore something that's new, to discover. And fantasy offers so much more potential for what hasn't been discovered yet. It gives so much potential to a writer, for instance, to be able to explore what's happening in the world without all of the limits of timetables and reality and clothing and stuff like that. So you can go off and explore. And so it's suited to children. You think of books like Peter Pan and Alice in Wonderland and Wizard of Oz and Wind in the Willows, Sword in the Stone, The Hobbit, all of these, and most recently, obviously, Harry Potter. But on the other hand, there's tremendous children's realistic classics. Bridge to Terabithia would be one written in the 1970s that I would see as an absolute classic in those terms. Bluefin, Seven Little Australians, stories like that, that are clear, everyday, realistic stories. One other little point, though. Historical stories, we talk about this long period in which people have to read in their generation. Books like Seven Little Australians are almost fantasies now. Even the Enid Blyton stories, ones like that, they're fantasies because they represent a society, the clothing, the food, the technology that that society has, which is as far removed from us now and as difficult for us ever to go to as Narnia or Hogwarts or anything like that. To read something like Treasure Island now is effectively reading a fantasy, whereas when it was written, it was meant to be more or less present day.
That's happened with some of Charles Dickens's books as well. I think A Christmas Carol is one that comes to mind that is now kind of considered a children's book.
Well, Oliver Twist is another one too. Simply because the key characters are of that age, it's assumed that the reader will be of the age of the key character. Charles Dickens' ones were searing social indictments of inequalities in his time. To modern readers, they're fantasies.
I find that some books that you know as classics, once you read them, aren't as good as you remember them to be or aren't as good as you expect them to be. So is a classic time dependent?
Certainly the setting determines whether it's seen as a commentary on your personal life. But similarly, reading styles change. As you age, you change. You learn more vocabulary. You have more experiences. You can make more comparisons with what you know. And the visual world of the 21st century, everything is so visual in how we communicate. 150 years ago, it was largely literate. You wrote letters, you talked to people, you had conversations, you went and listened to a speaker. But now we have pictures. Therefore, the nature of the reading changes. A lot of what we see as classics, the books like Treasure Island, Alice in Wonderland, are often read by adults who are ticking off the list of all the books I must read at some stage in my life. Because you require an adult vocabulary now to read those. The language in which they're written, Ivanhoe particularly, I read that a couple of years ago thinking that's the first time that Robin Hood appears in a major novel in English. He'd been in songs for about 600 years, but he hadn't appeared in a novel. And I found it almost impossible to read because of its intense, rich language of 1820 when it was written, because our whole styles change. Now, having said that, good child readers will persevere. They are voracious. I'm sure you've come across, and you may remember from your own childhood, you may well have been one of them, the child who forever has their nose in the book and they just read and read and read. Well, one thing about them is that they are so often serial readers. They will read the same book or the same type of book over and over again, and they'll persist.
Do you find, though, that these stories are just stories, that they're not classics? They've been repurposed by Hollywood, quite often by Disney, to such an extent that we don't know what the original stories were about. You referred a few times to Alice in Wonderland, where that was originally known as Through the Looking Glass, but nobody knows it by that anymore, and I'd say the story is very different from what we remember.
Yeah, a little bit of show-off here. It's actually two stories, two
books. See, there we go.
That Lewis Carroll, or Charles Dodson was his proper name. An interesting character. He was so socially inept, probably epileptic, and he was one of these people who could communicate really well with children but was hopeless with adults. And so he just felt so comfortable telling stories to children. And he wrote Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, or it was originally Alice's Adventures Underground. Then he did Through the Looking Glass a couple of years later. Now, the two have been conflated very, very much. Disney was behind that. Disney's done a wonderful job getting these stories to a lot of people who may not have come across them otherwise, but Disney has also exercised an ownership over them. I'm horrified at the number of people who seem to think that Disney created Peter Pan and Winnie the Pooh, and as an unabashed A.A. Milne fan, I'm appalled by the Disney cartoon, which is nothing much more than a Bugs Bunny bounce around thing where Tigger is the main character, not the lovely, gentle, philosophical Winnie the Pooh. Having said that, you look at all the Disney ones, right from Snow White, that first feature-length animation through to the modern day. And while there is a sameness about a lot of the characters and the stories, at least it is keeping those names and those stories in the public arena. And if people want to go and read them, they can. One of the lectures that I do in my series on History of Children's Lit is looking at Little Red Riding Hood and how much that story changes as it's told in different places, and how many ways that simple little story can be told by so many different people, for adults, for children, having the wolf as the key character, having Riding Hood as the key character. The commercialization, yes, it can make things a bit banal and directs them more into merchandising, but at least it's keeping those stories available, as all of these things, as I was saying before about visual learning and visual communication, as that changes, at least those stories are still there and people can go and hunt the other versions as they wish.
Mm. So why is it that sequels are rarely classics? Why do we only remember the first Wizard of Oz book? Or say,
and not the other 13.
Or say the first Peter Pan book and not Peter Pan in Kensington Gardens.
It depends on the story. The Harry Potter ones were intended right from the start to be this sequence of seven stories, and the final ones have sold far more than the first ones. You think of the Anne of Green Gables ones, there's seven in that series. People tend to run them all together. As I said before, a good child reader is so often a serial reader. I wouldn't agree that sequels aren't as good. Some of them aren't, but so many of them end up being just one major series. You think of something like Lord of the Rings. We think of it as just one story, not three separate books. Actually, it's six separate books, but they're published in pairs. And the Narnia series is seen as one sequence.
Is it harder to write a classic these days? Is there too much competition, or does a book just need time to become a classic?
I think both. As I said, reading is evolving. Movies and TV have changed reading hugely when they came in the 60s because they're such a passive medium. But lately, the extension of that type of visual storytelling into interactive gaming, for instance, has enabled the audience to become an active participant. I would still see that as storytelling. We may not define it as reading because it's being done visually, but it's still storytelling, and so many of those interactive games are based on particular books. So many of them just on Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and that style of sword and sorcery fantasy. So that vicarious emotional connection. And yet all of a sudden when we say that, oh, well, all of this online technology will take over, up jumps Harry Potter. Probably has done more for kids reading in the last 50 years than any other single thing.
Hmm.
And now, is it a classic? Well, it is certainly lasting in that it is now passed on to the next generation of kids. Kids who weren't born when Harry was first released, 15-odd years ago now. It's able to link to other media forms. And it's starting to be seen as, yes, it actually does say something. In one of my other areas, as editor of an academic journal, there is a huge critical response. Hundreds upon hundreds of books and articles, and not ones looking at it as an education aspect of children's reading, but as purely aesthetic, artistic analysis of Harry Potter, looking at things like how the wizards enslave the other magical races of house elves and the magical creatures, and looking at it from those sociological, serious, grown-up terms. So it appears Harry is starting to become a classic for ticking all of those boxes.
So how do classic adult books differ from children's classics?
There's probably two things: the aim of the book and the audience of the book. Children's books are not created by children, with very, very few exceptions. They're created by adults. So they reflect what adults think children ought to do and ought to be and ought to think. Now, Christa Paolini's Eragon series of dragon books, first one was written when he was 18, so he was thinking like a typical teenage boy as he was writing that book. They're not particularly good books compared to a lot of other dragon fantasy stories, but they're immensely popular because they can say things in a way that the young readers want to see them. Most of the others are written by adults. Some adults have that ear. Andrew Griffiths is one. I think A.A. Milne was another. His capacity to have his characters talk the way children would talk and think. Adults tend to view kids from a deficit model. They look at what children aren't. They're not old enough, they don't have enough language, they don't have enough experience, and they need to be trained and educated. So a lot of very serious, worthwhile, earnest books are written by adults for children in order to teach them. And by and large, they're ignored. There's a huge disparity between the awards that are given for children's books, between those which are voted by children and those which are voted by adults, like the Children's Book Council Awards. In many cases, the books which are on the adult voted lists disappear within 6 months off the shelves because kids just find them too earnest, too serious, teaching me about issues. They want to enjoy and be entertained. A lot of those adult-focused books are very, very judgmental. Children want to explore and discover. They read out. So that makes them a different audience to adults who tend to read in and want to analyse and internalise and understand. But on the other hand, a child is only a child for a short time, and they're an adult for a long time. So adult classic books tend to live a lot longer and go back centuries. Children's classic books, I think, have a much shorter lifespan as long as they've got something to say. Children's classics need to keep communicating something to a new generation. And we're in this huge revolution of communication. So whether the ones that we'd look at as classics in 20 years' time will still be classics is very, very difficult to say.
David Beagley there, and he's the editor of an international open access journal in children's literature called The Looking Glass. You can check it out at www.the-looking-glass.net. If you have any questions, comments or feedback about this podcast or any other, then send us an email at podcast@latrobe.edu.au.